you need to be focused on what we call the earlier stages, just because that's where the real innovation is really happening and where the disruption will like come from. And at the end, if you manage to get together with the right groups out there, you are all facing the same challenge.
Hello, and welcome to the CVC Unplugged podcast from GCV. I'm Fernando Moncada. The construction sector continues to face a number of really serious challenges: skill and labor shortages, lack of standardization, regulatory hurdles, and a massive carbon footprint, to name just a few. Sakwa Ventures, the construction tech-focused VC firm launched last year by three alumni of construction CVC units, aims to alleviate them. Every building is its own prototype, according to one of those founders, Juan Nieto, who joined me on the show to talk about how the new firm's first year has been both challenging and productive, and how he's found the transition from being a venture investor in one of the world's largest companies, Cemex, to starting a new firm that currently boasts a team of six. The major challenge, however, in an industry as fragmented as construction with such thin margins is technology adoption. The industry is so vast, though, that even relatively small penetration can translate into significant gains. While not a CVC itself, Sakwa Ventures still boasts a roster of corporate LPs in its fund who can still provide additional value for portfolio companies should they choose to collaborate. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe to CVC Unplugged, and above all, enjoy the show. Juan, it's great to see you. ¿Qué tal?
Muy bien. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for having me. I'm pretty excited about our discussion today.
Well, for the audience's sake, we'll keep it in English for now, tempting though it is to just switch to Spanish. But it's great to have you on. Just to give the audience some background, you were with Cemex Ventures for around 3 years. And then last year, together with your two co-founders, you founded Sakwa Ventures, still focusing on construction, but from a financial VC perspective.
That's correct. That's correct, Fernando. And thanks a lot for the short introduction. Yeah, so myself and my two co-founders, all three of us come from corporate VC backgrounds in construction. For two industry leaders, one is Cemex, which is a pretty large building material construction company headquartered in Mexico, but with global operations. And that the other company was Hilti. My partner has been working and leading their corporate VC for quite a long time. And then we decided to set up Sakwa Ventures like last year. But maybe let me get a little bit more like back in time, talk about my personal introduction, if that makes sense. I always like love buildings, to be very honest. So I wanted to be an architect. And yeah, but when I talked to my parents, I said I wanted to become an architect. It was like just like during the financial crisis, like the one related because of real estate, etc. So they told me probably it's not a good time to do that. Maybe you focus more on like the engineering side of things. So I decided to study civil engineer, which is not like far from that, but I really never enjoyed that. So when I graduated, I tried to go into my family business. So my father has created like an IT consulting firm, which has become like fairly large. So he tried to get me into the US operations of that. I did that for like almost a year, but then my interests were more in private markets. So I decided to come back to Europe, to my home country, which by the way is Spain, today I'm connecting from Madrid, although I have been living in Asia for quite a few time. And then I jumped into private equity fund of funds. So I was doing private equity fund investing for quite a long time. And then back in 2013, 2014, I also got the chance to be part of the formation of one of the Europe largest VC fund of funds programs called Galdana Ventures. So I was part of that. And then maybe a few years like down the road, I came across Cemex. So Cemex, a construction industry firm trying to get closer to technology and investing in technologies for the construction sector and trying to understand what could like directly or indirectly affect their day-to-day business. So I got to know them, basically like fall in love with what they were doing. And I decided to join them back in 2017. So I was with them for almost 5 years. I got the mandate to set up their Asia strategy. So I set up the Shanghai office. I lived there for almost 3 years. And I did most of the deals that they did from the corporate VC arm on topics related to decarbonization, productivity, and supply chain and logistics. And I had a lot of fun, to be very honest. So that's my short background on what I did prior to setting up Sakwa Ventures. That probably is a topic that we can get into later in the discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really interesting that you wanted to be an architect and became an engineer, because that's always the rivalry, right, in construction. The architect wants to do one thing and the engineer says, well, that's not realistic. And then the architect says, well, you're not being imaginative, whatever. So that always seems to be like the kind of tug of war, no?
That's correct. And at the end, like, so one of the issues that the industry has, which is not an issue like itself, is that very much every project is what we call like a prototype. So every project wants to be unique. As an engineers, what we look is after like standardization, right? So those are like two like worlds that cannot like coexist. And that's probably one of the issues why our industry has been like fairly traditional adopting like technology. But that has been like changing like quite fast during the past few years. And that's why we are here today.
No, that's super interesting. And tell me, I guess, about the founding of Asako itself, because as you said, you founded it with two other partners, one of which was at the CEMEX with you, the other at Hilti. So how did you guys kind of come together and decide, you know, you wanted to make this new thing?
That's a good question. And basically, doing innovation or corporate VC in construction, you basically face all the traditional challenges that these teams like tend to face, and probably there's nothing new for everyone like here, but the major challenge that the construction industry has is adoption. So adopting technology takes much longer versus like other industries. Just actually before hunting is like the lowest, like the industry that spends the lowest in IT. And it's not because we don't want to spend on that. It's just because like margins are pretty tight and also the industry is super fragmented. So myself and my two co-founders were facing those issues. So as corporate VC guys, we were talking to everyone externally, talking to venture capitals, talking to universities, talking to entrepreneurs and startups, and also on the same time trying to educate the company internally, facing all the traditional challenges of like trying to change like the company mindset. So we faced those challenges by our own, and we said maybe here there is an opportunity. So what we set up as Asako Ventures is a global vehicle which is aiming to address all that stuff. So at the end, as a corporate VC guy in construction or innovation team in construction, you basically need access to the global trends, right? So that's why we set up a global vehicle. You need to be focused on what we call the earlier stages, just because that's where the real innovation is really happening and where the stage, the disruption will like come from. And at the end, if you manage to get together with the right groups out there, you are all facing the same challenge. And we'll get into that probably like later today, but construction industry challenges are very much well known for everyone. Well, labor shortages, about like this lack of standardization that we commented. And at the end, every corporate with its own, like, let's say, perspective, whether these architects, engineers, but also general contractors, building material suppliers, equipment manufacturers, et cetera, are facing those challenges. So what we put together is a value proposition for all those groups. And we decided to set up Asako Ventures early last year, together with some of the industry largest conglomerates and leaders within construction. So we got investors like CEMEX, which has been our anchor investor, but also Procore, the fastest growing and one of the largest AEC software companies for construction, the ES Group from South Korea, which is the largest EPC player in the industry, and even groups like Volvo, which actually has a huge division for construction equipment. They are based out of Sweden, and they make more than 10 billion out of that division every year. So our fund has a global footprint. We have offices in San Francisco, Mexico City, New York, and Madrid. And I spend part of my time in Singapore. I go there once a quarter, just because we wanted to have this global coverage. We are a small people, we are a team of 6 people, and we try to cover all these regions by partnering with the right stakeholders across all those regions. So we have investors which are coming from Singapore, Hong Kong, South Korea, most of the major economies in Europe, similarly in North America, but also in Latin America. And all of them complement to each other in terms of the different profiles and regions that they are covering. That's why we are fostering this kind of high quality discussions around them, but also around the entrepreneurs that we talk to, and also about the innovation opportunities that we bring to them.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder, you know, with very kind of young firms like yours, if you feel like an extra kind of kinship with the entrepreneurs that you kind of invest in, because, you know, you kind of are an entrepreneur yourself right now, right? You know, you're in your first year, you're both investor and kind of new founder. Is that kind of giving you an extra kind of perspective on what they're going through?
Totally agree. Although I always call this like the fancy entrepreneurship, we are far away from what the, let's say, smart guys are doing out there. At the end, our job is dual. We need to raise capital to invest, but what is most important is invest in the right teams, right? So we are asset managers, and we deploy capital into other managers that need to deploy like accordingly on like hiring their teams and building like their company cultures, right? So one thing actually that like shocked me a lot is when we set up the fund, maybe like 3 months down the road, I think it was like summer last year, my desktop got broken. And I said, okay, maybe I'm going to call IT, but we realized that we are only 4 people and we don't have IT. So what we do then? And these like sort of like, let's say, dumb like questions that, or dumb like, let's say, situations that you got exposed to that you never realize when you're part of like a group like CEMEX. So when I was part of CEMEX, CEMEX is a group which is making roughly 15 to 16 billion in revenues a year, and they have close to 50,000 employees worldwide. So they are massive and they have resources everywhere. I got stuck in the Philippines while COVID because I was living in China. And when I got stuck there, they even like hosted me on their office there in the Philippines. They gave me a computer. They gave me and my wife like a place to live, etc. So it's like, okay, you have like the corporate backup. Nowadays, we are just six people. We don't have that. So you just need to get used to that. But it's true that you also have like a higher level of freedom and a higher level of agility, which is something that we always like faced when we were both at CEMEX and Hilti. Agility is not the, let's say, core benefit of a corporate VC when looking into investing in other startups. You basically are like bringing the capital, but also the potential customer, expansion partner, R&D partner, et cetera, et cetera. But agility is not there. So nowadays, what we try is to bring, let's say, bridge that gap between the agility that our partners can get into this and also the agility that we need to have to be, let's say, competitive in the market. And that's something that is not easy to do, but we are trying to stay up on that.
Yeah, so tell me how the kind of first year has gone. I mean, you guys have made quite a few investments already. I think 9, if I'm not mistaken, 8 or 9. And so, you know, has there anything in that kind of first year that's really surprised you that you weren't expecting?
That's a good question, and there is a lot of answers to that. But yeah, during the first year, so basically we were raising the capital while investing. So as of today, we got 2 new investments which are not listed on our website. So that's probably, there is only 9 there, but 2 more are already closed and will be disclosed in the next few weeks. Basically, over the year and a half that we have been operating, we have invested in 11 different companies, and we managed to raise more capital than what we expect. So initially, we were targeting a small early stage $50 million fund. Today, we are 15% above that, and we expect to be like 20 to 25% above that when we reach our final close. So fundraising-wise, it has gone well, but what we are most proud of is about the ecosystem that we have been able to create. So our partners or investors, which are 90% of them like large corporates in the construction industry, they are already talking to each other, and they are proactively asking us to do more gatherings between them so they get to know each other, and they, let's say, set up like these small like consortiums between them, like looking at problems together. That's something that we never realized it could happen. We always like thought of like us like being on the very middle of the discussions, but this is like currently like going on, which is something we are really proud of. But that's the ecosystem that we are creating. And maybe what we weren't expecting is this, let's say, reset of like the venture capital that we are living nowadays. So I have been in venture since 2017, but also in private markets since 2012. So I've never seen something like this. Interest rates going as up as today, and also like private markets not being as competitive as before. Good thing for us is that if you still have capital to deploy, you probably find like, let's say, better opportunities than before, multiple wise, but you also need to be really careful which one you pick, right? So that's why we are trying to deploy a lot more time to properly support our teams. So basically, like before, we didn't have like a lot of focus on trying to build which investors are going to invest right after us, or which could be like the potential, let's say, HR partners, like comms and marketing partners, et cetera, et cetera, that our startups could have. So we needed to set up like all of that, not from scratch, but from like, let's say, very basics. And today we have built this ecosystem, which is like playing out well, but it has taken us time. And there is a lot more to be done. And I expect that we can do this much better in the near future. So in a nutshell, a lot of, challenge from a, let's say, market perspective. But on the flip side, a lot of like good opportunities for funds like ourselves, which are industry specific and verticalized on a core industry like construction.
You mentioned some of the pros and cons of going from a CVC context to a traditional VC one, but you still have corporate LPs in your fund, right? So how much of that corporate focus remains as part of your strategy?
Yeah, I think like in theory, like could be like fairly straight like to answer this question. So instead of like having like a solo LP, like CEMEX, for me and my partner, like for our third partner, like Hilti, was to have like multiple LPs, but also jumping from like depending on your CVC setup, like specifically. But in CEMEX, we have like a pure aesthetic like goals when looking after investments. So looking for like going to the other side and basically looking for like pure like financial goals and objectives when investing in startups, right? So that's like the theory. For us, it's slightly different just because we are an industry specific fund, right? So when we're looking at investments, when I was at CEMEX, we're basically always trying to draw that line on how this could be strategically relevant for a corporation like CEMEX, either in the short, medium, or long-term like side of things, right? As of today, the beauty about this fund is that as we have assembled like complementary base of LPs, we are looking for a much broader, let's say, focus. So we look after like three main themes in our fund, which is productivity and safety, sustainability and European solutions. And it's basically any problem which is large enough to be solved by technology in construction. So now every time that we look into ag technology, that we don't have like the expertise internally to look after that, what we basically do is get back to LPs and get back to the right experts internally to the risk of investment decisions. And at the end, this is like mutually beneficial for us because we have information that other funds doesn't have access to. For the entrepreneurs, because they get access to R&D partners or potential customers in the short, like a medium term. And also for the investors, that they get access to opportunities that may they haven't like spotted before because they basically invest on later stages, right? This is the circle or like, let's say, vicious like circle that we have been able to deploy. And the end, like network affairs, like are playing out well. And we are also trying to open this, to not like, let's say, keep this close to our LPs only. So trying to open like this sort of ecosystem to the like broader industry and trying to make others participate. So something that probably not like all like venture capitalists out there do. So for example, when we did our annual meeting back in June in San Francisco, we did a day only for the LPs, but we did also like a second day, which what we call like community day. So we invited like the broader, let's say, corporate and startup, let's say, connections that we had around that area. And they came in and they started socializing as well. So we tried to put a lot of emphasis on community building, which by being on an industry-specific fund, you always like, have, let's say, topics to discuss about, common areas of interest, or even like common problem, pain points to solve. So that's what we tried to go after. And that's something that when I was at CMS, we weren't like proactively doing, to be honest. So we're trying to build like connections and synergies with other corporates in the industry, which could potentially be customers of like the mother company. But as of today, we are doing this like, let's say, plus out of 10, right? So we are doing much more of that.
Okay, that's really interesting. And like you said, obviously the focus doesn't have to be so strategic anymore, but are you still kind of facilitating the contact between the entrepreneurs and the LPs?
That's correct. So one thing that we do also pretty uniquely, which is not something that the VC industry is well known about, is about transparency. So every move we put together, an investor-only, let's say, email, trying to update on what we are seeing on the market, which research have done, which startups we found interesting, like within like the three domains that I shared, and also which, let's say, networking opportunities there are out there. So we proactively share this with them, but we even have like our own like CRM pretty much open to any of our LPs. So they are able like to access our live deal flow and on which stage we are in discussion with this company, even we are at 10 ship or like due diligence, advanced diligence, or even before. It's always what we say. So at the end, we are looking for like pure strategic, so pure like financial like objectives or goals, but maybe or LPs not. So we don't want them to miss out the right opportunities. What we do when they come in is we do what we call the strategic onboarding process. So we try to deeply understand which are their core objectives and goals by being part of this fund, what they want to achieve with us, and how we can facilitate them to go and be successful on their own CVC journeys. So after we do this, what we always say is, okay, as a fund, we are going to invest in 20 to 30 companies. That's our portfolio construction strategy. But out of like those 20 to 30 companies, maybe a quarter of those might be relevant for you because you are playing this specific role in construction. But we are trying with Sequoia Ventures is trying to allow you access to the broader ecosystem that we access to and don't act as this like barrier. So we are acting like as this facilitator. So we do a lot of interest, as you just mentioned, like for sure. But we also do a lot of workshops around like specific topics. So we just did one about sustainability, another one about green concrete and cement, another one about robotics. All those are hot topics for partners and the industry overall. And that's what we are trying to push for LPs or like for ecosystem to do more.
It's interesting. So your LPs can access like through some kind of portal and seeing like where your deal origination and how that's going and who you're speaking to, stuff like that.
Correct, straight away. And they even have that categorized by asset class. So whether they're like this solution is going after like commercial, residential, blah, 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 about which is their customer, which is the regions of operation, even some notes about what is the core value propositions of this startup and whether this startup is relevant or not. So we have like this transparent approach because we felt that in our own skins, when we were at CMEX and Hilti, we even invested in some funds, but at the end, like the funds or like the VC industry is not well positioned to support them like corporate ventures on their own journeys. So it's basically they give access to you to investment opportunities, whether they have taken the investment decision already, but not before. And you don't have visibility of what else we are looking after. So at the end, we get access to roughly 800 to 1,000 like construction tech startups every year. not everything is like high quality, but there's a lot of stuff that could be strategically relevant for some of our investors, for example, in Singapore or like in Belgium or in Sweden, and might not be relevant for the other folks which are based out of like Mexico or like Canada or even North America. So we try to create this mix about like, okay, what we do and how we deliver strategic value to them.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that with Fund One, you're looking at around, was it 20 investments, did you say, overall?
Yeah, most likely we'll end up like doing anything between like 23 to 25 investments. And we have done 11 of those already.
Nice. And that's, did you say, sorry, if I remember correctly just now, you mentioned 15 million for Fund One?
50,
yeah, right. Okay. I was going to say, so 20 and 25 investments from 15, that's some very efficient capital. No, 50 makes more sense.
That's true. Maybe let me give you a bit more color about our investment strategy.
Yeah,
so what
please.
We have done the most in our like Hilti and CMEX, let's say, takes is a lot of like pre-seed and seed. But most of the time we're doing seed just because that's the right time when as a CVC to get into deals. And also opportunistically some series A and B where there was like a strong strategic fit for us. As of today, what we do is investing on like 23 to 25 startups, whether those are like pre-seed, seed, and opportunistically series A. And on those like core regions that I mentioned. So we basically look after North America and Europe. But we have also like an option pool for emerging markets, whether those are Latin America or even Asia Pacific. So we are proactively doing investments on that front. Out of the 11 investments that we have done, 3 of those are in Europe, a couple in Germany and 1 in the UK. We have also 1 investment within Latin America. And we have also 7 investments within North America, in between the Canada and the US. So that's our investment mandate. And our value proposition is fairly clear. So we understand construction. We have been doing construction tech for 8 years roughly, like each of us, and we want to do more of this and keep like supporting our portfolio companies to find their product market fit, to like nail down like a proper like go-to-market strategy, because that's super important with an industry that is as fragmented as construction, and also trying to get to this sales motion that probably investors will require on later stages like fundraising. So that's our value proposition. And in order to do that, we just basically leverage a lot on the ecosystem, on all those corporate connections that we managed to assemble over the prior years, myself in Asia, living in the US, North America overall, and Mauricio, which is the third partner who was together with me in CIMEX, in Latin America, where he's originally from, and also Europe.
I want to pick up on something you said earlier about your geographical spread. So you're in Europe, you're in APAC, Asia Pacific, Latin America, and North America. And a constant challenge, I would imagine, for startups in construction is the regulatory framework itself, right? And that, of course, changes pretty dramatically, I think, depending on where you are, and it can be difficult for startups to navigate, right? So how do you help them do that?
Yeah, you are totally right. Actually, you spotted like right away, like first shot. So basically, regulation is very much local, and construction dynamics are very much local. So when you look, just like main difference between the US and like Europe, in the US, like there is a lot of firms which are used to subcontracting stuff. So they basically hire others to do the job like on behalf of them. In Europe, we see a lot more of like what we call like self-performing. So like folks like large like contractors and builders like doing their job like vertically on their own, right? So just like that's like core difference between North America and Europe. But you look into Southeast Asia, it's a whole different thing. You look into Latin America, it's a whole different thing. Maybe jumping a step back, like three to four core challenges that the industry is facing. First one is adoption. It's lower versus any other like tech-savvy industry. Obviously, not because like the different stakeholders doesn't want to adopt technology. It's just because margins are so thin that they are not like allowed to do it. They invest capital in R&D or IT.
So is that partly because, I guess, to for lack of a better way to put it, you know, getting it wrong is worse than, you know, getting it right is good. If that makes sense, is that a fair way to put it?
Again, it's part of the first. So basically, it's an industry of like pushing risk to someone else.
Right.
So you're an owner. You hire like someone to, let's say, consult you, do the design as an architect, do the calculations as like an engineer. You basically hire someone else to do the contracting and coordinate all the jobs. And that like contracting firm like subcontracts all their stuff, and that all the stuff like buys the material, et cetera, et cetera. So that's how complex is the whole construction value chain. And everyone has like different margins and actually different, let's say, adoptions or like appetite of risk. So like in summary, like contractors and builders are taking like the largest portion of the risk exposure, but they're having like the thinnest margins. So at the end, those are the guys who will be able to deploy technology, but they can't because they literally can't. There is no margins for that. And on top of that, the industry is hyper fragmented. So you probably look after how much of the construction value is added by groups of over like 500 to 1,000 people in every major like developed like economy. And roughly like just like 2% of that is taken by the big players, like 95, 98% is taken by the smallest players. So firms with like 1 to 10 like people, 15 people like the most, who are really like doing the job. So at the end, like this long tail is even longer in construction, and that prevents that technology adoption to be happening.
Interesting. So what is like, what would be rather a good model for kind of getting something to get adopted then, if you have to convince, you know, not just, you know, 3, 4, 5 big players to bring it on, but like, you know, hundreds of small ones?
That's a good question. And I wish I can answer that like right away. And I will also like set up like my own stuff. But yeah, the good thing, I'm on the flip side. So not everything is a challenge in construction. So construction is the second largest industry in the world. We basically add like between like 12 to 13 trillion like a year globally. So just behind financial services is the second largest industry in the world. And then the third one is actually real estate. So the transaction of the properties, which is roughly like 8 billion, like roughly 8 trillion, sorry. So at the end, those are like the second and third largest industries in the world is the segments that we are going after. So at the end, like the problems that we face in the industry always tend to be massive just because of the size of the industry. What I will always like recommend is try to really understand and nail down which is the problem that you are solving. Because like there's a lot of like solutions nowadays which are trying to solve like the labor shortages or the sustainability issues that the industry are facing. But you need to really get down to which specific stakeholder of that long supply chain that we commented is facing that, and trying to get the right go-to-market to go after them. So try to really identify who is going to get the value proposition out of that solution, and try to create like this like sales model which is able like to get them. And multiple times in construction, this happens like probably much more often versus in other industries. Like the core user is not the main, let's say, benefited from that solution, right? So that's why you need to try to put like the less barriers you can when adopting technologies. So make solutions like frictionless to adopt. So trying to remove like a lot of like challenge and try to make it as simple as you can, right? And this is like all like based on understanding the core needs of your customers, which is not easy, but after like a bit of research, you can get it.
You also spoke about the labor shortages that have, you know, for quite a while been a problem in this construction sector. And having covered infrastructure myself in the past, you know, that's always been an ongoing concern. And I do wonder, from your perspective as a VC investor now, to what extent can you also see that as an opportunity if you're looking at technology like automation or productivity tools?
We see a lot of opportunities, but you are right that those is a problem which is not easy to solve. So like another like challenge of construction is that productivity has been decreasing, right? So labor has been decreasing and the skilled labor has been decreasing even faster, but also productivity. So it's all that you invest, you get less year over year. And basically that's not like an easy challenge to solve. What we are seeing lately is that technology is starting to be there to get this solved, right? So for example, we did this big research about like robotics and automation on job sites, both on infrastructure side. So like long lasting, like and large like job sites, but also smallest job sites on like single family, multifamily residential housing. And what we have seen is that now the willingness to adopt robotics is much higher, especially for tasks that which are like highly repetitive, which entail, let's say, a high value added, let's say, hour of like input or labor or whatever, and also which are like fairly dangerous. So when all those like three things are happening, like we are seeing more willingness to adopt those technologies. And now like autonomy is there, high precision systems are there, like components, price of components has been decreasing consistently. So we are starting to see that. And when we did this research, this is something that one of my partners did like a few years back. We basically mapped literally like a handful of like technologies. I saw like doing like robotics and automation for like construction was like maybe like below like 20 to 30. When we did that research, it was like over, I think, like 100 like solutions already, just a couple of like years down the road. And multiple of those who has raised like, let's say, dozens of like millions in funding. So agree with, which is like a negative challenge that the industry and probably other industries are facing, which is so hard to solve, but the technology is starting to be there to be solved. And every like productivity gain that we can get out of like robotics automation, let's say workflow efficiency or whatever, is something that the industry will benefit from.
And it's one of the industries, I think, that's, you know, very kind of closely correlated with macro, with like the macroeconomic context, right? How does that kind of factor into your strategy? Well, at least in the, you know, since you started, because we're still kind of, you know, getting out of the pandemic era kind of downturn. And obviously venture capital itself over the past year has gone through its own kind of roller coaster. So yeah, how have you kind of been finding it?
So we are within a roller coaster industry, within a roller coaster like asset class. You're right.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, and you have working infrastructure, right? You probably like know it. So now like that interest rates are getting like higher and higher. You see like a little bit less of like residential going on, but then you look after like infrastructure, industrial, like data centers, and those are like just going up. Data centers now with all these like Gen AI, like so like, let's say tailwinds are just like very much needed elsewhere in the world. So at the end, it's a cyclical industry. If you look at like after one asset class or like versus the other, but when you look at the industry as a whole, at the end, it's not that cyclical, right? So the key is like for us will be, or is to have like, let's say a diversified like enough portfolio who can go around those cycles. And at the end, within like a traditional like PC like time frame, like 10 like to 12 years, you are going to go like around probably like two cycles. And now we are going around probably one of those cycles, especially on residential, plus how hard it is today to raise like for the capital. So we always like recommend your startups to be as lean as they can, to focus on metrics, to focus on like efficiency, some product, etc., so they can get there sooner rather than later. And for example, there's a really like, let's say, well-known like history within our segment, which is like Procore, this large project management tool based out of the US, which went into IPO at like over like 10 billion in valuation. Tui, which is the founder, and by the way, this is an LP in our fund, so full disclosure here. Tui, which is the founder of that company, founded the company back in the early this century. And he basically ran the company like fairly lean. He went through like a financial crisis, et cetera, especially in real estate. And he tried to stay lean. And then eventually like the industry was starting to be there, but he was ready to do that. So they listed the company. Today, this company is about, I think they are making like over like a billion in ARR already. And he's one of the top, let's say, construction softwares, but also B2B SaaS softwares in the whole world. So there's a lot of opportunities to disrupt. And if you do it properly and on the right way, I think there's a ton of opportunities to go after. And this is just like project management. There's a lot more to do. There's a lot around field management. There's a lot of like around like marketplaces, around payments, around like cash flow efficiency, workflow efficiency, et cetera, et cetera.
So we spoke about one of the pillars of your thesis, which is productivity, right? And there's another one that certainly, I mean, it's always been important, but certainly in the past few years has become very, very important, which is sustainability. I remember I was speaking on this very show with Yusuf Mawad from JCI Ventures, which is the CVC of Johnson Controls. And I was actually not that aware of the fact that, you know, 40% of emissions come from buildings, right? So it's a huge chunk of the kind of decarbonization equation, and certainly something that you guys are focused on. So how have you kind of seen the change over the past few years in the focus on that kind of area of construction?
Yeah, that's right on the spot again. I think this is one of the biggest, if not like the sole biggest challenge that the industry is facing today. So 40% of the global carbon emissions are coming from like buildings, and roughly like a fourth of that is coming from building materials. So which is like embodied carbon within those buildings. So at the end, like the challenge that the industry is facing nowadays is that there is a lot of like buildings that need to be decarbonized, and not all our buildings are going to be new. So at the end, you need to have a lot of like, let's say, retrofitting sort of technologies that needs to be adopted to make those buildings like more efficient. Good thing is that this came right on spot. So I think like real estate managers are like facing those challenges. Building material suppliers are addressing those challenges as well, but also contractors. So like the industry education around this topic is way more than before. So nowadays we can hear like the concept like EPD, which is environmental product declaration, which is the life cycle assessment on a product, which is commonly used in construction. 3 to 4 years back, just probably like the like leading players like Johnson Controls or a few others like were doing that, right? So I think I just mentioned that on a panel I was participating a few months ago. What we are seeing today in construction and like real estate overall is like green is the new digital. So traditionally in construction, when you face a project, you basically look after two main variables. The first one is like time, and the second one is cost. But now there is like this third variable like coming in, which is about sustainability. And don't think of like sustainability of like maybe like just using like sustainable like materials. I think like the biggest and like probably like the largest impact that you can have is just like think of like using like fewer materials, use a small amount of each, try to use like less polluting alternatives, and try to look after also like circularity or reusability. So a concept which is like fairly like well known in other industries, which is material passports, in construction just came in a few years back. So why don't you use a brick on this building? And once you demolish, instead of like destroying like the whole building again and getting that landfill, why don't you repurpose that brick for the next building? So there is a lot of new concepts that the industry is adopting and learning about, yet there is a lot to do. So this is like the single like biggest challenge that the industry is facing. And that's why we're also putting a lot of focus here. So out of the 11 investments that we have done, 4 of those are going after the sustainability challenge on building materials, on energy efficiency, on like serial retrofitting, et cetera, et cetera. And that's something that we want to do much more in the future.
And does that, to what extent does that kind of tie back to the whole idea of every building being its own prototype, right? Because if you want to make them more sustainable, then there should be some kind of element of standardization, right? At the very least on the regulatory side, has that had an effect at all on how buildings are built? Are they more standardized in that sense?
I think there has been like a lot of like attempts to make buildings on a, let's say, more like a standardized manner. Maybe like the automotive industry does like cars, for example, but like there has been like a lot of failures. At the end, the industry, as you said before, is cyclical. So the demand is also cyclical. If you invest large volumes or large capex into setting up like plants which are able to produce these buildings, let's say on a like frequent manner, it's really hard to get that match between the demand side and the supply chain and the capacity that you have to get into that, right? So that's why we believe it's important to break down into a specific like silos and like product elements and just basically do as like the automotive industry is doing. So just leveraging, just like trying to de-risk that by breaking down into like a small, like what we call a kit of parts. I think like the biggest failure like we have seen in the industry was a couple of years back when Katerra went bankrupt. There was this SoftBank backed startup that raised like over like $1 billion in funding, and they tried to basically do construction in an industrialized manner, prefabricated manner, but they drastically fail on the, let's say, installation side of things. So they were thinking like brilliantly on how like to produce buildings at scale on an industrialized manner, but they weren't really thinking about how you can install those. So how you can teach like the different stakeholders across the value chain on how you can install that building at scale again. So I think, yeah, ideally that could solve like a lot of problems. I think it's you need to take it with a bit of salt. So trying to break down into small silos and try to partner because there is no way that you can like vertically own like a whole, let's say, system or product and don't rely on anyone else to do it like just everything by your own.
Mm-hmm. And can you also talk about the kind of relationship between the sustainability piece and the third pillar of your strategy, which is urbanization? How do those two kind of fit together?
That's a really good point because that's something that we have been facing and most importantly since COVID. So like historically, this topic came in because we were seeing a lot of movements from people from rural areas to urban areas, right? And that was causing like housing affordability to get lower and lower just because everyone was competing for the same like buildings, for the same flats, for the same houses, etc. And then COVID came in and you see people which is going from, let's say, urban areas to suburban areas, or even like getting back and spring. So at the end, like housing needs to be much more flexible and infrastructure as well. So how you can, let's say, build this resiliency on what we call like the build world within a segment which is basically static. And the capacity is pretty much capped because of like the production volumes that you can do. So basically, we are looking after technologies which can make this housing more affordable, which can make it like flexible, which can allow like business models on like fractional ownership or whatever, like it could be around like assets and around like usage. So it's basically getting more innovative on the way that the same assets are being utilized, but also how we can allow like new assets to be built like faster and on a less expensive manner. That's a big topic for us now. And that's something where we are putting like a lot of attention lately and proactively looking for investments, to be very honest.
How does the kind of competitive landscape for the startups that you're looking at change within the different geographies that you're looking at?
That's a good question. Historically, when we started like investing on this, roughly like 80% of the deals were coming out of North America. So back in 2016, 2017, like construction technology was just like starting to break out. I think by those years, like less than 200 million like a year was invested in construction tech. And just for a matter of like contextualizing, last year alone, we got like 7 billion invested into construction tech. So it has been like a big jump, and this year we already surpassed that. So there is no slowdown in construction tech funding, like at all, even in the current market environment. Basically, 80% of that was coming from North America, like mostly like US. A lot of that was like going after like point solutions. That was like solving a specific problem, which a solution which is was enabling like better productivity, shorten gains, etc., etc. I think nowadays what we are seeing is a lot more competition out there around like point solutions. Like groups are starting to get like more and more exhausted about like getting like a new point solutions to solve like a specific problem. We are coming probably to an era where like groups wanted to monetize all that investment that they have put into adopting like project management solutions, field management solutions, 3D modeling, BIM, IoT, etc. And trying to not only gain these like short-term efficiencies, but rather trying to get this like long-term competitive advantage. So try to get into prediction of how the work will be. Trying to get knowledge from like prior projects, because by the way, we're a project-based industry, and try to account for those mistakes and learnings to next projects, get long-term savings, get, let's say, cost improvements, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why that's playing out like really well with all this like Gen AI like wave that we're seeing. The issue that I'm personally seeing on this specific segment is that in order to train all those models, you need access to data. And construction is not well known because of its like data availability and also how structured that data is, right? So we are seeing a lot of like interesting place of place for solutions that can differentiate themselves with innovative ways of getting access to that data and train their algorithms and their models with data that others are not able like to access. That's something that where we see like competitive advantages like nowadays on sophisticated markets. On other markets, let's say less savvy in terms of like technology adoption, or who didn't have access like to, let's say, these sort of like construction technologies in the past, we are seeing like steps that are being jumped. So for example, we haven't seen really like a marketplace for building materials taking out of like developed economies, like mostly like North America and maybe like some regions in Europe. But you look after like Southeast Asia, you look after like Latin America, and we have seen a few already like taking off. So just because of this industry specificness and also local specificness around like access to finance, access to banking, access to information, et cetera, like those models can be, let's say, getting up and getting traction there, but not on more developed economies. So that's something that you need to be like really bear in mind. So point solutions, probably not anymore on developed economies. And also trying to understand how you can bring, let's say, productivity gains for regions where, let's say, the industry is less savvy in terms of like technology adoption.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That's really interesting. And I wanted to ask, because we always do for all the guests that come on, just for the benefit of any entrepreneurs or founders and startups who may be listening. Firstly, what's the best way to get in touch with you guys and your team? And then when they get to pitch you, what is it that you want to hear from them?
I mean, let's say corporate answer, like for this will be just reach out through our website, through LinkedIn or whatever. To be honest, like best way like to get to us is through, let's say, warm referrals. First by the founders that we have invested either like for PM funds or like this fund, or maybe other like groups that are within our network, right? So that's where we pay attention the most, just because if it comes like refer from a person that we trust, it's much better than if you like basically call reach out through website, etc. We are fairly active going into most of like the startup like forums, like let's say not like Slash here in Europe, Web Summit, etc., but also like industry specific like conference, like Blueprint, like Build Worlds, like the UK Construction Week there in London, etc. So you can just also like look after us in all the major, let's say, construction technology events and gatherings out there. And we are fairly, let's say, open to having discussions and bounce ideas about like technology in construction. That's part of what we like doing. That's why we set up this firm. And we always enjoy having like discussions with like people which is way smarter than ourselves.
Well, I mean that's always what everyone wants, right? Everyone wants someone else to be the smarter person in the room for sure. And then on the flip side of that, then what pitfalls should they avoid as founders when kind of pitching you?
Yeah, and really, I mean, maybe getting back to something that I think we commented before. So trying to really understand which problem you are solving. The industry is really broad. Problems are like massive, but think twice. Top to bottom, bottom up, etc. Like ways of like quantifying that problem and really understanding who is suffering that problem. Because most of the times it's not, let's say, that easy to get who is getting like the main value proposition out of your tool and try to understand which problem you're solving. That's first. And second, nail down your go-to-market. Again, fragmented industry, multiple stakeholders. So really understand what is the shortest path to get to your customers and trying to get them adopting your technology. And probably if they have heard like till now, they will understand how many challenges that the industry is facing around adoption. So they don't want to put like extra barriers for the technologies to be adopted. So try to like build products which are frictionless, which are bringing new ideas and new concepts, but don't complicate stuff. We are working on a large industry, but it's simple at the end. We are just building stuff. So trying to make them easy to adopt your solution.
Fair enough. No, I think that's pretty solid advice there. And then lastly, I think you might be perfectly placed to answer this actually, because you just recently came out of the CVC world, and that is, you know, what can corporates do, you know, more of or better job of to help their own venturing units as well as the rest of the ecosystem?
This is a really good question, and probably we could have like another like whole, let's say, discussion about it.
Yeah.
What I always would like to hear, because we also pitch to corporates because we wanted to get their funds and we wanted to get them like investing in our fund. So try to get as much visibility as you can about the value proposition that you are bringing to entrepreneurs. So at the end, like this is like a people business. So the other side, even that you are much larger in terms of size and resources, probably that the startup you are talking to, trying to position yourself like properly on what is your value proposition, where you can add value or where you cannot. I mean, at the end, like what I always said, if you position like a fund like us with like a corporate, like one by one, we can just provide the capital. But a corporate VC can provide the capital, but also a customer relation, it could be a fairly large customer relation, R&D resources, market expansion resources, et cetera, et cetera. So if you are able to really quantify and systematize a way of like working with the startups into the extent that you can, that is going to be extremely helpful like for you as a corporate VC, because you are going to access like better quality deals, or you are going to get your company getting a lot of aesthetic benefits out of those startup investment and collaboration that you allow.
Many fund managers that have multiple corporate LPs also kind of had to juggle with the various objectives that the different corporates have, right? Has that ever been an issue for you guys?
Not at all, because we try to position us like super fund friendly. So we try to position like our LPs like obviously first. That's why they are our LPs, and try to make sure that the entrepreneur has like a clear idea or which is this value proposition that we just commented, they can get out of that relation. So it's not that we cherry pick like the LPs that we partnered with, but they try to help them to like properly articulate the value proposition to entrepreneurs. So we just facilitate the connection, and we never like obligate like entrepreneurs to take funding out of them. We just basically facilitate the connection, and we never promise co-investment opportunities. That's something that we cannot do, because it's always like upon the entrepreneur to whether accept them or not. We will never like do, let's say, black box, like sort of like SPV vehicles, where like the entrepreneurs don't know where that capital is coming from. So we are super transparent both with our investors, but also with the entrepreneurs that we are investing. So they know who we're partnering with.
Great. Well, I think that's a great note to wrap things up there, Juan. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate your time. And, you know, here's to making year two as good as year one. So good luck, and I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Let's cross fingers, and just maybe like wanted to thank you again, like Fernando and the whole like global like corporate venturing ecosystem. What you guys are doing is amazing. When I was at CIMEX, I was always looking after your newsletter, because you always like pointed out like right interviews and like real experience about like other like troubles that CVCs are experimenting. And as we were like just commenting like off like recording, we always recommend you as the go-to ecosystem for like corporate VCs who are getting into this. So we'll be very happy to keep doing that in the future and to doing more of this, like collaborating more.
Absolutely. No, thank you. And I'll relay that note to our team, who I'm sure will also appreciate it very much. That's what we try to do. So we appreciate you saying that.
Thanks a lot, Fernando.
That about does it for this week, folks. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I have been Fernando Moncada. Our sound engineer is Mark Chatterley from Inner Production. Go check out his work today at innerproduction.com. We'll be back again next week, as ever. Until then, have a good one.